to you from the Forge of Freedom studio in the heart of America, a podcast dedicated to preserving freedom and inspiring personal success. Freedom is born and lives through you, the individual, and it dies in the shadows of tyranny. Motivating our listeners to become well-rounded, freedom-minded people with the body of an athlete, the mind of a stoic, and the spirit of a warrior. The Tree of Liberty lives on through you, the Forge of Freedom. And now here's your host, Alex Uli.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli, and this is episode 65 of the Forge of Freedom. Today for Monday, Gun Day, I've got Mike Uli back in the studio to discuss some recent news out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals involving the California's high capacity magazine ban. And first of all, good morning, Mike.
Hey, Alex. Good to be back.
So one thing we want to talk about today is not just the substance of the decision. In fact, we're not going to get into the substance in great detail, but we want to talk to folks about what the procedural posture is with this case, because there's the procedural side of things and then also the substantive side of things. And obviously, we think that, and I'll link to this in the show notes, Judge Benitez, the district court judge in California or in the Ninth Circuit, did a fantastic job when wrote a wonderful opinion, which we'll link to, basically dismantling the California high capacity magazine ban from a constitutional perspective, especially in light of the Bruin decision from the Supreme Court. But one thing that I think is lost on many people who are not attorneys is what is meant by, number one, district court, circuit court, Supreme Court. What does it mean to GVR? What does it mean to hear a case en banc versus by a panel? These are all sorts of terms that are thrown around on YouTube and by the legal community that I think are taken for granted that people understand. So we want to explain some of that today, and we'll get into that here in just a little bit. Mike, you want to say, make a few comments, just sort of highlight what's going on substantively with the case out in California?
Yeah, and kind of this week for me, just a little background, I was involved in a civil case this week, and voir dire happened in this case. I'll just not to identify anybody, but sometimes I'll just leave it at this. I think very, very good attorneys, I'm not talking about me, very, very good attorneys sometimes use words and phrases that jurors don't necessarily understand, and that we as lawyers take for granted. It doesn't mean that we're smarter than anybody else. It's kind of like going to your mechanic, and when he talks about the ICP, you need to change your ICP valve on your diesel engine. Doesn't mean you're stupid. You're not familiar with ICP valves.
So you don't speak that language.
You don't speak that language. So I think that sort of sowed the seeds for this episode. And one of the things that we do, we teach a 5 or 6 hour legal class with respect to the use of force and firearms. And you have a section of that class that's sort of a civics lesson on how the courts are organized. And I think it's important for people to understand a couple of things. And I think the gun community, maybe you just came back. We'll talk about that next week. You just came back from the Second Amendment Foundation Gun Rights Policy Conference. But I think it's we make a lot of assumptions in the gun community about what folks understand in terms of the legal system. And even if you're out there listening and you understand it, maybe this will help you articulate to other folks that don't understand it. And I think it's always a good time to refresh our recollection about how our court system works. And I want to say a couple things real quick. Of course, we have state systems, like we're in Indiana, and that's where you go. And if you've got a small claims case, or you're in a car wreck, or somebody has a DUI or commits a murder, or there's a divorce, or there's somebody dies and the state has to be open. Those sorts of things are generally handled in the state courts. And people are involved in the state courts every day, all day. But we also have a system. I like to put up my copy of the Constitution, a system of federal courts that are separate and distinct, although you can appeal decisions in some instances. From state courts to the United States Supreme Court, for instance, and I won't get into this. There can be other interfaces between state courts and federal courts, but the U.S. Constitution has what we call Article 3 courts. Article 3 of the Constitution establishes the judicial powers that the founders contemplated the federal judiciary was going to have. So that's where we start from when we talk about federal courts. Another thing I want to talk about, we even use the word substantive and procedural, sort of assuming everybody understands what that is. And you mentioned Judge Benitez's decision, I think it was this past week, where he indicated that California's ban on magazines with a capacity in excess of 10 was unconstitutional. Well, that decision that California's law was unconstitutional, that was the substantive decision that Judge Benitez made. But we also have to have a law and rules that tell us how courts logistically work in terms of being able to turn out those substantive decisions. And that's what we want to talk about today. How does a case in the federal system, we're not talking about that divorce or car wreck case or a criminal case, how does a case that's in federal court, and by the way, federal courts have limited jurisdiction. There's a couple ways you can get into federal court. One of which is if there's a federal question, constitutional question. So that's what we're going to limit ourselves to here today. But if you've got a constitutional question, you want to get into federal court, what's that winding road to get maybe in those very few cases that make it there to get to the United States Supreme Court in Washington, D.C.? So anyway, I hope that made some sense.
Yeah. So they're like you said, the rules of the road with respect to how to bring a claim. If you're the one who's been injured or harmed as a result of some violation of the law or alleged violation of the law, and the rules are not all that simple. So and the structure, and I don't think it's intuitive to folks who haven't been exposed to the judicial system. But like you said, Mike, there's the state system. There are state courts, and then there are federal courts. And there are lots of ways that you can get into one or the other of those, but oftentimes it's based on a violation of the state constitution or state law. Generally, if that's the case, you'll bring the case in state court. And if there's been a violation of federal law or the federal constitution, generally you would bring that claim in federal court. Now, there are lots of exceptions to that, and I don't want to overly complicate things, but generally, especially if there's been a violation of the federal constitution, that case is going to be filed in federal court. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, and don't get us wrong. I want to say again so people don't think we're dimwits here. I mean, there are other ways you can get into federal court.
For
sure.
There's
diversity jurisdiction. The amount in controversy has to be so much. There are lots of other ways, but we're going to constrain our discussions here to federal question or to this gun case is what we're going to use as an exemplar, but we're going to talk about constitutional issues in the Second Amendment specifically.
Yeah. So this case out in California was filed by the California Rifle and Pistol Association actually back in 2017, I believe. And it was filed in federal district court. So when you hear the term district court, that means the lowest level federal court. That's the trial court in the federal court system. So there is the district court, and then there are intermediate courts of appeals in the federal court system. They are called circuit courts. California, with a couple other states, are in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and there are 13 courts of appeals, including 12 regional circuits. So California happens to be in the ninth. So if the plaintiff brings a case in the California district court, one of the California district courts, and the party that loses wants to appeal, they would appeal the decision of the district court judge to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And then if there's a decision or an opinion at the Court of Appeals level, the circuit level, then the parties would have one more opportunity to appeal to the United States Supreme Court, the highest court in the country. So that's the general structure at the federal court level. Now,
so just to highlight, though, there's about 94 federal district courts. Okay, every state has at least one. Here in Indiana, we have two, the Northern District and the Southern District. So that you have those federal district courts. Then above that, sort of their superior court, is these courts of appeal. And in the gun context, we hear about the Fifth Circuit decisions, which is generally a pro-gun court of appeal. And then we hear about the Ninth Circuit, which is generally an anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment, anti-freedom court of appeals. But after those courts of appeal, which there are 12 of them, there's a 13th federal, and there's some other federal courts that act as appellate courts. But after that, the only place you can go is the United States Supreme Court, which hears 150-ish cases a year. Is that, or do you know? I don't even know.
I don't know.
Very many.
Yeah. So the court, United States Supreme Court, I apologize. The United States Supreme Court is asked to review many cases every year, and they only accept about 2%.
Yeah.
And I don't have the exact figure at my hands, but it's a very low percentage of cases that they actually accept. And one of the ways that they prioritize cases that they're going to hear or review is where there is a disagreement among the circuit courts, so among the intermediate courts of appeal. And so, for instance, you mentioned the Fifth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit. They are often in disagreement about the Second Amendment, especially in the wake of Bruin. There have been a litany of cases circulating in the Fifth and the Ninth Circuits where there is a disagreement on the same issue between those two circuits. That's called a circuit split. And the Supreme Court is more likely to step in that situation to try to resolve that disagreement among the circuit courts.
Yeah, and a couple other things about these circuit courts. For instance, we're in the Seventh Circuit. I'm admitted to the Seventh Circuit, but it covers the states of Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. So it's pretty small geographically. And then, like I said, you hear a lot about the Fifth Circuit. I think it's Texas, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Actually, I got a Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. So a little bigger than the Seventh Circuit from a geographic standpoint. And then you have the Ninth Circuit, which is huge. It covers the left-leaning liberal Pacific coast of this country. Washington, Oregon, California is the big one. Arizona, Nevada, Idaho, and Montana. So that's huge. And like I said, they're generally very anti-freedom, anti-gun out there. And I think it's also important to understand, thanks for bringing that up. It's also important to understand, which for our discussion a little bit later on, it's my, and I don't know how many appellate court judges are in each federal district, in each federal appellate court, but it's my understanding it depends on the population of their district. So the Ninth Circuit, for instance, I think they have 30-ish, around 30, maybe plus, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, 30 appellate court judges at the Federal Court of Appeals. The Seventh Circuit, where we're at, I think there's only 10 or 11, something like that. So it's pretty small. I think there are smaller ones and there are bigger ones. So if you get online and look at all the federal appellate courts, then the amount of judges on each of those courts depends on the size and the population of the area that they represent. Yeah. And these were all established, by the way, by Congress. I'm not sure how they were established organically, but this is what we have now in terms of courts of appeal. There has been some discussion, too, about breaking up the Ninth Circuit because it is so large and for other reasons we won't get into here today.
And if you're watching this podcast by video, I've put up a map of the federal circuit courts, so the federal courts of appeals. You can see the map here, and you can tell that the Ninth Circuit is absolutely massive. So that's, and it even includes, you see there, Alaska. So even if you just look at the lower 48, it's massive. But then when you include Alaska in there, geographically, it's massive. So one thing, so we've talked about sort of the basics here with the structure of the federal court. But why are we talking about this with respect to this particular case? And the case, I should say, I don't think I've said it yet, is Duncan v. Bonta, which is a case that was filed in California, in the Federal District Court in California in 2017. And that case was decided, and the high-capacity magazine ban was determined to be unconstitutional by the Federal District Court way back in 2017 or 2018.
And the same judge.
Judge Benitez. The parties appealed. The state of California through the Attorney General, appealed, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, through a three-judge panel, affirmed Judge Benitez's decision from the district court.
All right, let's stop right there. Here's an assumption. Three-judge panel. Why did you use that term? And what happens in most of these federal district courts when a – strike that – in the appellate courts is an opinion is appealed from a federal district court to the federal appellate court, and usually just three of those judges from that appellate the appellate circuit court hear the case. So that's called a panel. Those three judges, which are selected randomly, I'm not sure if it's a computer, I'm not sure how they do it, but they're selected randomly. They hear the case and they'll issue a decision about whether they affirm or reverse or lots of things they can do with a federal district court decision. But that three judge panel hears it, and usually that's the end of the case.
Yep. Usually.
But in this case, and it's not, this is how generally they work. And every federal appellate court has rules that are a little different, but we're just talking about generalities here. Then after the panel decision, the parties can ask that the court, what we say, en banc.
Means by the bench.
By the bench. It's French. The origin is from the French language. But anyway, the whole court can hear it. Now, the whole court may not be the whole court necessarily. For instance, in the Ninth Circuit, an en banc decision is from, 11 members of the
Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Thank you for making me get the language correct here. Mm-hmm. So it's not all 30 judges or 30-ish, how many ever there are. It's 11 make the decision. And then they may change the decision, reverse the decision, whatever, with respect to the three-judge panel. Okay. And then after the en banc decision from the Federal Court of Appeals, the only way to change that in most instances is an appeal that's accepted the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah. So it's almost like an internal appeal within the particular circuit court. So from the three judge panel, the parties can request review by en banc by the full panel. Or in the Ninth Circuit, which is 11 judges. So, and like you said, the rules within each circuit are slightly different. They all have a particular set of rules. But the important point to note about this case is that when you appeal from the district court opinion, almost always that appeal is heard by a three-judge panel or considered by a three-judge panel.
And that's what happened in this case several years ago.
Yep.
And then after the three-judge panel, what happened?
The three-judge panel affirmed the decision of the district court, and then the case was heard en banc by the panel in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the en banc panel overturned the decision of the district court. Which upheld the constitutionality of the California high capacity magazine ban. And that decision remained in place until the Bruin decision from June 2022, which was the United States Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, well, it was actually appealed to the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court didn't address it until Bruin.
Correct. So the Bruin decision comes down June 2022, and the Supreme Court GVRs the Duncan case out of the Ninth Circuit, which means they granted review of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision. They vacated the decision, and they remanded it for reconsideration within the context of the Bruin decision. So they said, Ninth Circuit, reconsider your decision in light of our opinion in Bruin, right? So that's why the case is now back in the Ninth Circuit, actually in the Ninth District Court, the Ninth Circuit District Court. Judge Benitez, a little over a week ago, September 22nd, issues a 71-page opinion finding that the high-capacity magazine ban is unconstitutional, and this is where we want to talk, kind of get into the nitty gritty a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. And keep in mind, the reason the United States Supreme Court said essentially, hey, Ninth Circuit, look at this case again in light of Bruin, is because the Ninth Circuit I think inappropriately, had done this interest balancing test about the Second Amendment. In other words, they're like, essentially, in layman's terms, the court said, well, the state's got this important state interest in keeping folks safe. Don't yell at me. I know it's BS that the magazine ban somehow keeps people safe, but the state makes this argument, and the court says we have to weigh this against the constitutional rights. Well, of course, the Ninth Circuit treats the Second Amendment as a second-class right, and they almost always say that the state's interest, California's interest, is more important than the individual right, particularly when it comes to the Second Amendment, and therefore they endorse whatever the state of California wants to do. Well, in Bruin, the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, that's not the way we do these Second Amendment cases. It's not a Second Amendment. It's not a second-class right. And if the banned activity affects the Second Amendment, an exercise under the Second Amendment, then you have to look at the traditions and the law that existed, I think, at the founding in 1791. There's some debate about whether we look to Civil War era or not. But anyway, so the Supreme Court changed the analysis with respect to Second Amendment cases, which is why they sent it back down to the Ninth Circuit.
Yep. So they sent it back down to the Ninth Circuit to apply the appropriate standard, the standard that was affirmed by Bruin. And that is, we don't engage in this interest balancing. The court said in Bruin that interest balancing was done at the time of the founding, when the Second Amendment was adopted, was included as part of the Bill of Rights, that they determined that individual right was more important than whatever state interest exists. And there is no interest balancing that was done. So the question is, does the proposed regulation burden the exercise of your right to keep and bear arms? And if it does, the state, that is in this case, the state of California, has to show that there is an analogous regulation at the time of the founding that comports with the text, history, and tradition of the Second Amendment. And that clearly cannot be done with respect to this high-capacity magazine ban.
So Judge Benitez, the Ninth Circuit, hears the Supreme Court, and as traditional, the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals sends it back down to the Federal District Court so that it can hear arguments from both sides, look at the facts, look at the law, and make a decision. Well, Judge Benitez just recently, same judge, hears it again, Judge Benitez. And guess what? Judge Benitez says, well, just like before, I thought California's magazine ban was unconstitutional. It still is today under the Bruin analysis as well. And I'll read one passage from this. And by the way, it's 70 plus pages, his decision. And it's a really good exercise to read that, to arm yourself with the arguments and to understand to understand how these cases should be analyzed.
And one thing before you read that, you mentioned that there is some debate about what period of history we look to when we review the text, history, and tradition of the Second Amendment. I think it's clear what period of history we look to. The Supreme Court in Bruin said we look to the time of the founding. We only look to later history around the time of the 14th Amendment after the Civil War for a confirmation of our understanding of the history from the time of the founding. The debate, not really a debate, but the debate that you're referring to is basically these circuit courts that are trying to subvert the Supreme Court's guidance.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you. You're right. I think you're absolutely right about that, because before, how the federal courts tried to subvert the Supreme Court said in Heller and McDonald is by using this interest balancing test. Well, the Supreme Court made it clear that was wrong. Mm-hmm. So they've got to find some other tool to subvert the right. So that's why they're saying, hey, we can look to these other time periods to find these analogous laws out there. So thank you for that clarification.
They're trying to generate a debate that doesn't exist.
I agree. Yeah. Amen. But that's the debate we've got to deal with now. And you'll see that a little bit in this decision. But if I could just indulge me, this one quote, I think it sums it all up, Judge Benitez, and this is towards the end of the opinion, but he says, one government solution to a few madmen with guns is a law that makes into criminals responsible, law-abiding people wanting larger magazines simply to protect themselves. The history and tradition of the Second Amendment clearly supports state laws against the use or misuse of firearms with unlawful intent, but not the disarmament of law-abiding citizens. The kind of solution, that kind of solution is an infringement on the constitutional right of citizens to keep and bear arms. The adoption of the Second Amendment was a freedom calculus decided long ago by our first citizens who cherished individual freedom with its risks more than the subservient security of a British ruler or the smothering safety of domestic lawmakers. The freedom they fought for was worth fighting for then, and that freedom is entitled to be preserved still, period. So I think that's one of his best quotes from the opinion.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful opinion, very well written, heavily footnoted, and I'll link to the opinion, the 71-page opinion in the show notes so that you can read it yourself if you'd like. It's accessible even to, except for some of the procedural stuff, but it's accessible even to folks without a legal background. So I'll link to that. I'll also link to, I'll say now, to the Michelle and Associates website. They're the firm that is litigating this Duncan v. Bonta case, and they have a list with links to all the documents that are, or most of the documents that have been filed in this case, and sort of a timeline of the case. I'll link to that. But, oh, go ahead.
A couple things. One thing I want to think before I forget about it. A lot of folks may say, oh, this is happening out in California. Who cares? Well, the reason this is important to everybody everywhere, because eventually if the Supreme Court were, I don't think they will, but if they were to adopt the reasoning of the Ninth Circuit, for instance, that would affect all of us in every state. So that's why it's important to pay attention to all of these cases in all of the various federal appellate courts.
So I'll link to the Michelle and Associates website with the sort of the timeline and the document links to all the filings in this case, and also link to the California Rifle and Pistol Association website. They have lots of great information about this case as well. And like you said, Mike, this is not just the Ninth Circuit. This is an issue that affects all of us that care about the right to keep and bear arms nationwide.
So there's a little bit of a, if I could, you want me to talk about the procedural?
Well, go ahead. No, I'm going to let you take the reins here in just a second. But so the case was GVR'd. It was granted review by the Supreme Court. It was vacated. It was remanded back to the Ninth Circuit, and it was sent all the way back down to the district court for Judge Benitez. So a little over a week ago, September 22nd, Judge Benitez issues his opinion, finding that the high-capacity magazine ban is unconstitutional. The state of California appeals once again to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and this is where things get a little bit interesting. You want to talk about that, Mike?
Yeah. By the way, Judge Benitez stays the enforcement. He basically says, hey, listen, your 15-round magazine.
10-round.
Well, your 15-round magazine, okay, with your Glock 19 is no longer illegal, okay? Or your 17-round magazine with your Glock 17 or whatever it is. Whatever flavor of gun you have is not illegal. But don't get in a hurry. I'm going to stay my decision. It's not going to take effect right now for 10 days because he gives the state of California that time to appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So the law hasn't technically changed yet. He made a substantive decision, but he stayed it, meaning it's not going to take effect yet, so to give the other side a chance to appeal, which they have appealed. And the controversy in this case is, remember we said originally, usually a three-judge panel will hear these appeals from the federal district court level, and that's what happened the first time around with this case. But it's mine, and I'm not admitted to the Ninth Circuit, but it's my understanding the Ninth Circuit took what was an unprecedented or nearly unprecedented decision to skip the three-judge panel and allow this to go to the original 11-judge en banc panel to hear this appeal from Judge Benitez's decision, appeal of his decision.
As an initial matter, it went to the en banc panel, which is almost unprecedented. I'm not aware of, there may be another case, but I'm not aware of another case where this has happened, where it's gone, skipped over the three-judge panel and gone straight to the en banc.
Yeah. Now, looking in from the outside and talking to other folks that know more about the Ninth Circuit, or listening to other folks that know more about the Ninth Circuit than I do, this looks like from the outside, you know, the way for these pro or these anti-gun judges, anti-freedom judges in the Ninth Circuit, at least when it comes to the Second Amendment, for them to take this case back and do whatever they're going to do to carve up the Second Amendment right. Maybe we'll see what the Ninth Circuit does. But some folks think that they wanted to skip the three judge panel and a random selection of three judges who might make a pro Second Amendment decision. Because remember, I think the Ninth Circuit is divided to the extent it matters, and I think it does. It's divided pretty equally between judges that were appointed by Republican presidents and judges that were appointed by Democratic presidents. I think it's probably 60-40 in favor of judges that were appointed by Democrats. But rather than have this randomness, and you may have a randomness then ultimately with 11-judge panel, that randomness could create a decision that was favorable to the Second Amendment. And some people think that they did this, these judges did that. By the way, it's not just me. It's other judges on the Ninth Circuit said that this was wholly inappropriate, wrong, and hurts the reputation of the courts by doing this because they just stepped in so that the cake's already baked, so to speak, and we know what's going to happen.
Yeah, so there was an injunction entered by Judge Benitez. That injunction was stayed by Judge Benitez. And let me back up. An injunction means the state is prevented from enforcing the magazine ban. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they are enjoined from enforcing the magazine ban. Judge Benitez stayed, put that injunction on pause for 10 days to give the state an opportunity to appeal. And the ninth, and this is what you're getting at, Mike, the Ninth Circuit, the full panel, was concerned that if a three-judge panel got the case, got the appeal, that Judge Benitez's injunction would go into effect, that the stay of that injunction would be lifted. And so in order to avoid that from happening, the full panel stepped in to prevent that from happening because they wanted California's law to be able to
stay in effect. So they stayed the Ninth Circuit, the 11-judge panel, stayed the enforcement of Judge Benitez's decision is what it amounts to.
Correct.
So California law stayed in the status quo state. You can't go out and legally buy a magazine, a standard magazine that goes with a Glock 19 or a Glock 17.
Yeah.
Yet.
In California. And I'm going to read here from the California Rifle and Pistol Association website. They address this issue a little bit. I think it's interesting because I hadn't heard this from other outlets in the media. It says the judges from the original three-judge panel were not happy about this move, meaning they're not happy about the full panel stepping in on the initial appeal, and expressed great vitriol towards their fellow judges for passing over them. But CRPA, the California Rifle and Pistol Association, believes that this move will make the Duncan case move more quickly through the appeals process and lines this case up as one of the first in line to be heard in the next session of the Supreme Court. In short, this may have saved 2 years of litigation by the court choosing to place the appeal with the en banc panel right away. At this time, we do not have a briefing or hearing schedule past the October 10th date at this point, but we will report on those upcoming dates as they are set by the court. So there may be some silver lining to this decision by the full panel inserting themselves early on, because it may accelerate the process to the Supreme Court. Even though I think that this is maybe unprecedented and a terrible move, obviously I think a political move by the Ninth Circuit full panel, hopefully the Supreme Court steps in and affirms the district court decision here, the decision by Judge Benitez.
Yeah, and I think what's important here, which I'm not nearly his equal by any stretch, he's much, much, much more talented than I. But if I were Clarence Thomas, I'd be a little ticked about what the Ninth Circuit has done here.
I think there may be a little bit of a smackdown, and a smackdown by the courts or by a judge sounds a bit tempered, but it's obvious when the court is making being critical of their inferior judges, and by inferior I mean the circuit court is lower on the totem pole than the Supreme Court, and I think the Supreme Court will be very critical of what the Ninth Circuit has done here.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about this, I think this, the California Rifle and Pistol Association used the word vitriol in describing the reaction from some of the judges within the Ninth Circuit. That's unusual. Mm-hmm. Usually there's this internal criticism of the institution, and that's unusual coming from judges, this sort of I think criticism anyway. There can be criticism about the position you take legally on a matter, but to criticize the motives as to why other judges within the Ninth Circuit were doing what they're doing, I think is unusual and disturbing. And I think it's sort of a reflection of where we're at as a country now, on lots of areas.
Judges strive very hard. They're very conscientious of maintaining the legitimacy, the view that the courts are legitimate and the legitimacy of the court. So they are very reluctant to criticize other members of the court, while they may at the same time disagree and be critical of their views. To be critical in this fashion is very unusual.
But to me, this is a reflection of sort of a breakdown in the process where judges, instead of going through the process, which is, I know, very cumbersome and time consuming, but instead of going through the process, they're working quickly to get the result that they want, rather than analysis of the law that should be done within the context of the Supreme Court decisions we have, i.e. Bruin and Heller and McDonald and others.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Mike. Well, I hope we've explained it in a way that helps make some sense out of this situation for our listeners. I think it's important to understand that the structure and the process, not just the substance behind the, any case in the federal court, but especially with respect to this Duncan v. Bonta case that's been in the news recently.
Yeah. And remember, one other thing that's important that most of your viewers or listeners will understand, I mentioned this a little earlier, these federal judges all of the federal judges that we've talked about here at the federal district court level and at the Court of Appeals and at the Supreme Court are nominated by the President of the United States. So that's why whoever's president is important, because we get judges that are true to the text of the Constitution generally, not always, if you have a more conservative president, and we get judges who are more progressive, like the like we've seen in the Ninth Circuit, who like to kind of, in my estimation, my opinion, like to make the law the way they think it ought to be in an ideal world, not in accord with the Constitution necessarily.
They view themselves more as public policy analysts and trying to do what's best for the country, making them imposing their viewpoints on the cases and the law. And that's exactly the opposite of what was intended by our Constitution.
And that's why you can see how important the appointment of judges is in our political process. And by the way, they're approved by the Senate.
All right. Well, that's where we'll leave it, Mike. And I appreciate you coming on once again to help explain this interesting but somewhat complex topic. Those sort of that three panel versus en banc distinction, I think, is sort of a mystery to most folks. So hopefully it makes more sense to our listeners now.
Hope so. And I'd encourage people to go out and read Judge Benitez's opinion, because it is very educational.
Yep. And I'll link to that in the show notes. So thanks everybody for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, don't forget to like and subscribe. It helps us spread the message of freedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter @ForgeOfFreedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.